This episode is brought to you by my program and guide, Yoga Mama Journey, Journey to a Happy and Healthy Pregnancy and Baby. Navigating pregnancy can be so transformative in the best possible ways, but it can also feel overwhelming at times. I've put together a program and guide that will help you to alleviate some of that guesswork and be in great shape, mind and body, for when baby comes into your world. This program contains prenatal workouts, prenatal yoga flows, prenatal Pilates, affirmations for pregnancy, pregnancy supplement checklist, baby registry checklist, hospital bag checklist, and additional resources. You can use the link in the show notes to access the Yoga Mama Journey, Journey to a Happy and Healthy Pregnancy and Baby program and guide. Welcome to Balance Your Life podcast. My name is Megan Farrell and I am the host of the show. This podcast is designed to inspire and empower you to start and maintain your own wellness journey so you can become the best version of yourself. Let's begin. Welcome back to another episode of Balance Your Life podcast. I am your host, Megan Farrell Gordon. Today we are talking all about sleep, and this is a topic that I am currently very passionate about, seeing as I'm getting not as much sleep as I have in the past. So dealing with a little one, I mean, if you're a new mama or a mama in general, you get it, you know, but that doesn't mean that I don't want the rest of you sleeping like a baby and sleeping to the best ability that you have. And that is what we are talking about today. Today on the podcast, I am joined by Dr. Peter Martoni. Peter is an educator and patient care practitioner who has been focused on improving patients' biomechanics for over 23 years during his private practice as a chiropractor. Dr. Martoni has always believed that structure of your spine affects the function of the central nervous system, and this principle is the cornerstone of his practice. His belief is that the central nervous system controls every function in the human body, and in order to be able to express true health, you have to keep your nervous system healthy. Peter's mission is to help as many people as possible achieve optimal health, function, and performance so they can reach their full potential. On this episode, we have talked about how certain sleep positions affect our health, help us sleep better and live longer, and how to set yourself up for the most ideal sleep. We also discuss 5 keys to waking up well rested, why tossing and turning during sleep is bad, mouth taping, and so much more. Dr. Peter has also very generously given 20% off of his pillow, the Neck Nest, by using the code BALANCE, BALANCE, at checkout. I will make sure that that is linked in the show notes so you can grab your 20% off of his Neck Nest pillow. With that, please welcome Dr. Peter Martoni to the Balance Your Life podcast. Welcome to the show. I'm a huge fan of consuming water throughout the day, but sometimes it can be kind of boring. I like to jazz up my water, and one of my favorite ways to do that is by adding juicy strawberry peach electrolytes by Organica into my simple modern tumbler and drink it in the afternoon. I'm really particular about the supplements I consume, and these electrolytes are gluten-free, they're non-GMO, and caffeine-free. There are also no preservatives, there's no artificial colors or flavors, and no artificial sweeteners. There's zero sugar, 5 grams of grass-fed collagen per serving, and it's a source of magnesium, which we are all depleted in. This is such a simple way to add something good into your body, and it's easy to do. Drinking plain water, unfortunately, isn't always good enough, and we miss out on some vital hydration for our body. Not only do electrolytes hydrate you, but they help with maintaining water balance, muscle contraction, nerve impulses, and temperature regulation. And the collagen is a source of grass-fed protein, which helps improve the overall look and health of our skin, hair, and nails. Right now, Organica is giving my community 25% off their orders online when you use code MEGHAN25, M-E-G-H-A-N, 25 at checkout. Grab the electrolytes, and I also really like the enhanced collagen with magnesium biglycinate and L-theanine for my nighttime wind-down drink. I just add it into my tea and snuggle in for a good night's rest. Don't forget to use code MEGHAN, M-E-G-H-A-N, 25 at checkout to receive 25% off of your order. Enjoy! Welcome to the show, Dr. Peter Matarni. I'm so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
I would love if you could give a little bio of who you are and where in the world you are currently joining me from today.
Well, I've been a chiropractor for over 24 years, focusing on structural alignment, how to maintain a healthy structure to maintain a healthy life. And we'll talk about how that kind of got me into the sleep world. But I am joining you from just outside of Boston, Massachusetts, north of the city in a little town called Lynnfield, Mass. And it's great to be here. And like I said, after this, I am really a big sleeper. So I'm focused on sleeping. And because I have sacrificed my sleep the last couple of days, I will be taking a nap right after this podcast. So I am super excited.
I love it so much. Nothing like a good nap when you're like, your body is just absolutely craving it.
It is so good. It is so great.
I would love to back right up to the start of your journey. What led you even into the world of wanting to be a chiropractor? Were your parents really into health and wellness? Was there something in your life that catapulted you into the space of wanting to become a chiropractor?
Yeah, so I was originally going to medical school, and my father had brought me to a chiropractor when I was in an auto accident when I was in high school, and many, many years ago now. And I wasn't a big fan of the profession just based on how I was, I didn't like the experience I had. So, fast forward, when I was thinking about going to medical school, I had taken this this course. I was a lifeguard, so I had to take a certification course. I had met a chiropractor there, and he's like, "Oh, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Well, I'm going to medical school." And he said, "Well, you ever thought about chiropractic?" I'm like, "Well, I really have done it. It really wasn't for me." He's like, "Well, explain that to me." And after the car accident, I ended up having a digestion issue. And when he, explained it, where with the spine's out of alignment, it can put pressure on a nerve and it can affect the function of that nerve. So it could be causing, that old car accident could be causing the issue with your stomach. And I'm like, well, all right, I'll give it a shot. Within a couple of adjustments, my stomach pain was gone. I didn't have to take any of that reflux medication, which didn't make sense to me anyways when I was a kid. And I was like, holy mackerel, you can actually get health by aligning the structure of the spine. And that made so much sense to me, I ended up going into chiropractic.
It's so amazing to hear stories like that, especially the ones I think where it's like you tried something and you weren't really into it first, and then you find yourself into the space afterwards. And totally just side note, but speaking on the digestive side of things, my husband has two herniated discs in his back. And one of the things that both a chiropractor and a surgeon had said to him was, because he suffers with IBS, and they're like, that could be maybe not fully the reason why, but there could be a reason why you're having so many digestive issues because of the unalignment in your spine. And like, his hips are really out of alignment because he compensates for the herniated disc. And to me, I mean, when they broke that down, it made sense, but it's not something that you wouldn't initially make that correlation to, which I think is just wild.
Yeah. So now let me take it to the next step, because this is actually very interesting. Now, what got me into the sleep world was a herniated disc in my own spine. So one of the issues is I was adjusting people over my table for years and years and years and years. At that time, I was adjusting people for about 13 years, but I had always had back pain my entire life. And I had been getting adjusted, but I attributed to, I'm a competitive, a mountain biker, rock climb. I'm really not too easy on my body. And especially, you know, adjusting, you know, thousands and thousands of different people, that puts a lot of stress on your body. So I just attributed it. Oh, it's just the problems in my back. I'm over people. I use it too much, like most people do, because pain is not normal. But because it's so common for us, we just live with it. And a degenerated disc is not normal. And you have to understand that a degenerated disc is, the body doesn't make mistakes. It's reacting to something. So I didn't have that understanding at the time. And then in a mountain biking injury, I herniated my disc. My disc herniated, my leg was numb. I'm in the emergency room and I'm sitting there. I'm like, how can I be a chiropractor now at that point for 13 years, be in the emergency room with the herniated disc? And you kind of feel like a failure because you're like, what the hell is going on? Oh, sorry, what the heck is going on? So I reviewed over 3,000 x-rays and found that the problem wasn't in my lower back. It was in my neck because I had forward head posture, and the forward head posture reacts. The way the body reacts is it causes there's a muscle in your lumbar, in your lower back, called your psoas major. It causes a psoas major spasm. It reacts to the riding reflex. That is the only muscle that attaches directly to a disc. So all of these years, I didn't have a lower back issue that was creating my disc problems. I had a neck alignment issues. And then I ended up creating a specific pillow or changing my sleeping position to correct that. And then once I corrected my neck by changing my sleeping position, I never had back pain again.
That's such an incredible story. And I would love to. So this is what led you to.
I zigzagged all the way into the sleep industry. Yes.
I know. I love it so much. And don't worry, you can absolutely swear on the podcast. I'll put a little disclaimer if needed, but I love the topic of sleep, and it's something that I think we all know how important sleep is on some level. Even if we don't know the science necessarily behind it, we're like, we know how important sleep is. And yet I would say most of us don't get a good night's sleep, or most of the time than not, we don't feel rested, or there's just so many things that go into it. So I would love to talk about this, the way that you corrected your neck while you were sleeping. Why do you feel like it was during your sleep? What was it that you were doing at nighttime that helped to correct your neck and relieve yourself from pain?
Well, there's a law at play in the body that's called Davis's law. And Davis's law, simply stated, is basically tissue will remold based on the stresses that it's applied to. So for right now, if you look and you look at some of the ancient just tribes in Africa, they have big plates in their lips. Have you ever seen those plates? Well, you right now would not be able to fit one of those plates in your lip. It takes years and years and years of slow tension on that tissue to stretch that tissue into the position that it needs to be in order to be able to, so you do a small plate, then a bigger plate and a bigger plate. And then finally you get the size of the plate you need. Well, think about that. That's remolding tissue with constant stress on it, applied to it. So we are a culture that we text all day long with our forward head posture. We drive cars, we're on computers, we sleep in our beautiful, comfortable little side positions with our chins tucked. The definition of a pillow is a support for your head. We support our heads at night when we're sleeping. All of these things are destroying the structure of the cervical spine slowly over a lifetime, causing everybody to have the same problems adaptively and, you know, culturally. So when somebody comes into my office, I can look at people and tell them what's wrong with them, because most people have the same patterns and the tissue remolds based on those patterns. So understanding that that is a law fundamentally in the body, you can then backtrack that and say, well, then so the cervical curve typically should go this way. You know, let's say should arch. So I should have an arch in my neck. Most people's curves, they're called kyphotic, or it's called tech neck. They either lose a cervical curve or it's reversed due to that forward head posture. And then in order to reverse that, you have to stretch it back slowly over a period of time. Well, what better time to be productive than at night, 8 hours a night when you're sleeping? So that's kind of how because the longer stretch that you can put the neck into extension, the more longer term change you will have, and you can offset the damaging effect of the modern day lifestyle.
It's like the perfect definition of multitasking. You're getting a good night's sleep, and then you're also realigning your neck and your spine. So I would even love, you seem like the perfect person to talk to about this, but besides the idea of, like, we just know that sleep is good for us, what are some things, maybe on a scientific background, but maybe broken down into layman terms, that our body actually does while we sleep? Like, why is it so important that we get a good night rest?
All right. So there are two different nervous systems in your body. There are the nervous system that's called the sympathetics, or your fight or flight. And then there are your parasympathetics, which are your grow and develop. I do these podcasts. Well, not these podcasts. I do like Instagrams or TikToks. You know, we just had our first one go over like 1.4 million views. And I gave this education the other day, or last month. I said 1 to 3 weeks after a time change, you're going to see the people around you getting sick. And it does not going to have anything to do with more viruses in the area. It's because of how it affects your sleep and what it does to you internally. It puts your body, with lack of sleep and not getting proper sleep, it puts your body into what's called a sympathetic state or a survival state. And it suppresses the parasympathetic response. So if you can think about the survival system, which I know you know about, it's like running from a tiger. That your heart rate needs to increase, your respiratory rate needs to increase. So a very specific systems need to come online to allow you to survive. Well, in contrast to that, that you have your thrive system. So you have survive and thrive, or grow. So there are specific systems that are in charge with, you know, healing and nurturing and growing. Those systems are, these are all three: immune system, digestive system, and reproductive system. When somebody has an issue with sympathetic dominance or parasympathetic inhibition, you're going to have a digestion issue, you're going to have a reproductive issue or hormonal imbalance, and you're going to have digestion, reproduction, and immune system. And you're going to have some sort of immune system dysfunction, whether it's always a stuffy nose, whether it's allergies. There's going to be some issue in those systems. So when we don't sleep well, it makes our adrenals take over, which is a sympathetic response. So you become sympathetic dominant. You suppress all of your thrive systems. So slowly over a period of time, chronic fatigue destroys your body internally because it can't heal.
No, it's so amazing. And I mean, speaking of the time change, we just went through it, and it's something I get. The reason why we used to do the time change, it makes perfect sense to me. Back in the day, I get the farmers and everything, but nowadays I'm like, I cannot believe that we're still doing this. And I don't know about Boston, but where I used to live in Ontario, they talked about it for years and years and years about switching it over, because, like, what's the point? There's all these, you know, they say like car accidents are higher on the day after the time change, and there's more like hospital visits, and yeah, people tend to get sick more. And then I don't know, we just never did anything about it, and it just absolutely makes no sense to me. But I'm not in politics to make that change, so I guess because of this device that you've created that helps to kind of correct the neck and the spine, what are some of the problems, I guess, with the way that we're we're sleeping? Like, why is it wrong or bad to be sleeping on our sides in the fetal position? Because as soon as you described that position, I was like, oh my God, that's exactly what I do. And I know it's so bad. And I try to like correct myself, and I always find myself waking up with like the knees up towards the chest. I tend to like hunch over a little bit when I wake up. So like, why does sleeping position matter? And what sort of, I don't like to use the word damage, are we doing, but essentially what kind of damage are we doing by sleeping in the wrong positions?
So, so when I talk about sleeping positions, the biggest, how can you say it? It's the biggest pushback I get, especially in the sleep industry, because we're all taught that side sleeping is the best position to sleep in. And the reason why you like to sleep in your side positions, not you, but people in general, is because it's, you feel protected, right? So when you are curled up in a ball, just like the ostrich sticking its head in the ground, it feels protected when its head's in the ground. You feel protected when you're curled up in a ball. And there was a study that was done. Everybody uses the gold standard. It's, the study was done on sides, is determining the best sleeping position based on the variable that they were looking at. It was called lymphatic drainage. Lymphatic drainage is how the body, you know, detoxifies, let's say at night it happens, but it also happens during the day. And it's just flow of lymph around your system. So the study, the problem was done on rats. In the rat's spine is complete reversal. It's the cervical spine, then the human spine. It's kyphotic, ours is lordotic. So the issue is when you look at and there's a significant statement in that study saying this was done on rats, but we are concluding that it would be the same in humans. And it doesn't make sense to and they use that as the gold standard on the side sleeping position. And when you're looking at the most important system in the entire human body is the nervous system, because the nervous system controls everything. And the spine, structurally, one of the main functions is to protect the central nervous system. And as a chiropractor, we know that when the spine is out of alignment, it affects the function and integrity of that nervous system. So to me, what the greatest importance that we should use as an anchor is to sleep in a position that maintains the health and wellness of the spine, and use that as our anchor, not lymphatic drainage. And when we do that, the position to sleep in is, we call it a neutral sleeping position. It's a position, it's not sleeping position, it should be called sleeping posture. It's establishing the right way to sleep by structurally not putting a pillow under your head, but get a support under your neck, allowing that neck to arch back, arms, almost like you're in a coffin, arms and hands are down by your sides, your joints are in a neutral position. And by doing that, I'm able to sleep on my back, put a glass of water on my chest, and it will still be there in the morning. I don't toss and turn, because that is a neutral position for me to be in. Now, when you first start that, I'm going to demonstrate the position for you. When I first put you into this position, you'll be like, there's no way I can do that, because all of these objections come up, and you are going to have to overcome airway issues with some people. You're going to feel like you're falling back because you're not protected. And we have education that helps people overcome these, but I'm going to show you the position. And for those of you that are listening, I will explain the position. For those of you that are watching, just watch it. And just with an open mind, when you start with this position, understand that you will not be able to stay in this position for all night long at the beginning. So you only start for 1 to 2 hours a night. Then in the middle of the night, we don't care what you do. 1 to 2 hours a night, like the position I'm going to show you, that will be enough to transform the health of your spine when you sleep. It will decrease the amount of tossing and turning. It'll allow you to get a deeper sleep because you're not going to be in as much pain sleeping. All sorts of good things are going to happen. Okay? Megan, we ready?
We're good, yeah.
All right. I'm going to move this little camera down. kind of like a little weird bed situation thing I got going on here. But we're going to figure it out. All right, you see that? Okay. So when you use a pillow defined as a support for your head. Let's get that out of our head. I'm going to use a neck nest here. Then I have one of these other little pillow things. And I'll show you how to use like one of these horrible little pillows to do the same thing. All right. So what you do is you take a pillow, you put it on its edge. You're going to get it behind your neck and you're going to sleep like this. You can also take something and put it on your eyes, your head. You can put it on your body to create protection. But that is how you're going to sleep, with something under your neck, with your hands down by your sides, and then your neck will be arched back. And then that will help you restore the curve. You can take a regular pillow and try to like jam it under there too. And then that is the position you should stay on for about 1 to 2 hours a night.
Amazing. And you had mentioned, when somebody's first starting out, something about like breathing properly and like airway passaging. Will that be corrected as you learn to adjust to sleeping with this neck pillow? Or is that something that needs to be tackled on as a separate issue in itself?
People don't breathe correct to begin with. A lot of people are mouth breathers. They don't know how to breathe out of their nose. In dentistry, you really want to try to focus on getting that tongue sucked up to the palate and holding your mouth shut. So there are different things to overcome the airway issues that people have, but it usually is a little bit of a deeper issue. So we like at night when I go to sleep, I'll put covers underneath my chin to help at the beginning to help my mouth stay closed, especially if you have any alcohol, because then the mouth opens up and the tongue drops back and then you start snoring. So there are different obstacles to overcome airway. You can use so a sleep mask, right? You can put on like this, but you can also use a sleep mask this way to just lightly hold the mouth shut. So there are different things that you can do to help people keep that airway open.
The new kind of like trend that I've been seeing pop up on like TikTok and Instagram, and everyone's been saying how much it really has improved their quality of sleep too, is that the mouth tape. It looks like a little X that kind of goes across with it. I was told that one issue at a time for me, like let's get through the pregnancy first, because I was like, maybe I should start doing this like halfway through my pregnancy. And the doctor was like, we'll do that after the baby is born and stuff. Like, let's focus on.
So that's interesting. I was at a pediatric conference this weekend, and the presenter was talking about sleep positions for a pregnant woman. And they said, oh yeah, on your side. Okay. Yep. Yep. I'm like, can I ask a question? Why on your side? You know, like what is the on your side thing? Cause everybody says it. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, you sleep flat, and then the baby can put pressure. I'm like, well, if you sleep on your side and you have relaxing in your system, doesn't that distort the whole pelvic floor and the weight of the baby will change the dynamic of the pelvis? And they're like, yeah, it could in theory. I'm like, well, no, it does. I said, but how about teaching pregnant mothers to sleep elevated? In an elevated position with their legs up and taking pressure off of the aorta and stuff like that with the baby there, and then maintain the integrity of the spine. I didn't go into this much depth on that, but I just said, yeah, you know, it's, I think it'd be better to sleep elevated with something under their legs so you can keep the pelvis aligned so there's a better pregnancy. And that's kind of my take on it. So when my wife was pregnant, we didn't have her sleep on her side. We created this elevated sleeping position for her. It worked great.
Oh, that's so interesting. I will have to try that because, yeah, I was always told just from hearing, you know, other people talk or other experts or doctors, you know, sleep on your left side, not to sleep on your back because of the uterus compressed down on, you know, the breathing there for the baby. And I asked my doctor about it and she's like, She's like, it's not my favorite study that's ever done. She's like, I see the validity to it. Like it on paper, it makes sense. She's like, I think it's just more important that you get a good night's sleep, whatever that looks like for you. Because funny backstory is we watched a movie and I was on my back. I had pillows underneath my neck and my head. I had something underneath my knees and I totally like had a panic attack because I was like, I'm not supposed to be on my back for this long period of time. And I hope I didn't do any damage. And my doctor kind of laughed. I think she kind of gets where I'm coming from now, but she's like, you know, like just make sure you're sleeping really well. And she's like, your body will wake you up and tell you to move. If you are falling asleep or cutting off circulation somewhere, like the body will tell you to, it's time to move.
It does. And the same thing can happen on your side. I mean, you know, you got to think about this. It's a three-dimensional thing that's going on there. If you're on your side, you know, the distortion in the stomach, does that open up? No, it takes the uterus and wraps it around. It's just distorting it in a different way. Really, the sleeping on your back issue is more for you. You know, if your legs go numb, if it puts pressure on your obturator nerve, you know what I mean? But if you sleep in an elevated position and, you know, only 7 degrees, they make these little like bed wedges. And yeah. You could take those pillows behind you, create a little elevated sleeping position, then put something under your legs and sleep like this. Perfectly fine.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that and see if that works for me. I want to talk about some of the key concepts or the keys to getting a really good sleep. Besides having this neck pillow underneath your neck so that we're strengthening our spine, we're kind of getting into alignment with the spine, we're correcting any sort of neck imbalances or back imbalances. What are some other key things that we need in order to really optimize and get a good night's sleep?
Well, the biggest thing to understand about sleep is a mind game. And when you look at getting a good night's sleep, like the last three things you think about before you go to bed can affect your entire sleep for that night. So we have to understand there's a difference in our brain. We all like to control, right? We love to control things. That's why a lot of times when we go to sleep, we have to like give up, you know, to the space of safety and go to sleep and into a safe space, and we're unproductive. I'm teaching you how to be productive, but it's a time where people think it's wasted. And sleep is really like, picture the iPhone, if you or a smartphone. If you have all of the apps open, that you're expecting a lot of performance out of that phone, well, what do you have to do? You have to plug it in and recharge it. And if you only plug it in a little bit at a time, you're going to drain the battery and it's going to run out and it's going to die. Well, it's the same thing in your body. If you want to exercise more, you want more performance out of the body, but you're only going to recharge it a little bit, what's going to end up happening is you're not going to die like the battery. You're going to get sick. You're going to internalize disease. You're going to have breathing issues, asthma, allergies. You're going to have hormonal imbalances. These are all, most chronic illness is some way attached to chronic sleep. So we have to understand it's important to get good sleep. And when we control something, we can't think when we go to bed. You can't think about your to-do list. You can't think about something that is going to happen tomorrow, something that just happened to you today. You don't want to think about that. You want to remember, because then the blood or the energy is in a different part of your brain where your memories are, versus where you're actively consciously thinking. You're in the prefrontal cortex. Well, when you're remembering, you're in a different part of your brain, and the remembering areas where your memories are is real close to your sleep center. So you want to be able to remember yourself to sleep. You don't want to think yourself to sleep. And that is a really key point that I make within my sleep community, is that if you need to be in control of something, be in control of remembering a good memory in the past. And once you fall asleep on that memory, remember it over and over and over again, and you'll get to sleep quicker and you'll stay asleep longer. So that is a good technique.
Yeah. No, it's, you know, I can think of when I go to sleep or something, like I guess someone could, or some could call it visualization, or I try to like think of good positive things that I want to happen in my life, that have happened in my life, that I'm working towards and stuff. There's nothing I like, personally for myself, I know if I'm falling asleep and I'm like, I'm stressed about something, or I had a bad day and I'm thinking about that bad day, like it impacts my sleep quality so much. So I guess I'm also curious, like on a tangible level, like what, as somebody who's like a sleep expert, what are things that we can do starting today that would help us? Like, I'm sure you're not a fan of having the phone in the room, but like, would that be something that you would say, get rid of the phone in the room? Let's get rid of a TV maybe in the room. Does the quality or like the firmness of a mattress matter? Like, are there tangible things that we can do to like really help set us up for a good night's sleep?
First thing, a change of sleeping position. Second thing is you want to focus on maintaining no light in your room, right? You want to make sure that you have a very, very dark environment to fall asleep in. And one of the major issues with being able to get good, deep, restorative sleep is that our body temperatures are a little too high because we eat a little too late. So you want to decrease the amount of food that you have in your digestive tract by decreasing, you know, you should have your last big good sized meal not within 4 hours of going to bed. So you really want to be able to have a little bit of food in your stomach, not a lot, because digestion, the byproduct of digestion is heat, and we need our body temperature to cool by 1 to 2 degrees to get into deep sleep. So you want to watch the amount of food that intake that you eat. Another one is a lot of people like to have caffeine after noontime. You don't want to have any stimulants after 12 p.m. because the half-life of caffeine is 5 hours. So if you have 300 milligrams of caffeine in one of our like little Starbucks, then 5 hours later, which would be 5 p.m., you still have 150 milligrams. 5 hours later, which would be 10 p.m., you still have 75 milligrams of caffeine in your system, and you need to have below 25 milligrams to not affect the quality of your sleep. So you got to look at diet, you got to look at core temperature, and you got to look at light leaks. Those would be, you know, those would be some of the things that you can control environmentally. And then the major thing that I have people do, especially that have sleep issues, is get on a consistent schedule. You really want to go to bed and wake up at the same time, and if possible, without an alarm.
It's my favorite thing. And I'm sure as a doctor, you can appreciate this, but it's my favorite thing when people are like, I'm fine to have coffee at 8 o'clock at night. Like, it doesn't impact my sleep at all. And I'm like, if you think that, A, I'm curious to know, like, if you were to be hooked up to machines, like how good a quality your sleep is. And B, I'm like, if you feel like you're getting a good night's sleep, okay. But could you imagine not having that caffeine later at night and like how much better your quality would be? Like, I'm always just so blown away by the people who are like, I like to have a cup of coffee. And again, you said like the Starbucks thing. Like, I think like, let's be real. Our cups of coffee are like not an actual cup of coffee. Yeah. It's who like at least two. I know. Yeah. No, it's anytime I hear that, and I'm not a doctor, I'm just like, oh my goodness, please stop doing that.
Well, so let's just ask you as a non-doctor, just a smart little, little person that loves health. What does coffee do to your heart rate? Does it increase it or decrease it?
It increases it.
Right. So what is one of the things along with body core temperature that needs to happen in order for you to get not to sleep, but in order for you to get good quality sleep? Do you think at night your heart rate needs to increase or decrease?
decrease.
And if you have the effect of stimulants in your system, even though you're sleeping, your heart rate's high, you're not getting good, deep, quality, restorative sleep. So yes, you may be able to fall asleep. You may even stay asleep, but your body's not getting into deep sleep.
And then the cycle starts all over again because they need the cup of coffee first thing in the morning to kind of keep them going. What are some things that we can do maybe even during the day to help us get a really good night quality of sleep? Because I will say for myself, when I first started out on this journey, I started like with an exercise program, and I was somebody who didn't have, I was an oversleeper. Like I always constantly felt tired. So I mean, my naps were like an hour to 2 hours long and stuff. There was a whole thing. I was on antidepressants and all of that stuff too. And I'm not anymore. But I will say personally, when I started working out more, I noticed the quality of my sleep improved. So I didn't necessarily focus on my sleep first. I focused on exercise first. And that became like a domino effect for me sleeping better and getting better sleep.
So one of the issues with exercise, what does exercise do to your heart rate? Does it decrease it or increase it?
Increases it.
Okay. So how long after exercise do you know that your metabolism's increased for?
I don't know.
It's about 2 to 3 hours. Okay. So what ends up happening is exercise is very, very good. Like tonight, I'm gonna go mountain biking. I'm gonna have a bad quality sleep tonight because I'm gonna bike. I think we're going at 4 tonight. I'll bike from 4 to about 6. My heart rate is going to be high until about 2 a.m. and then it will drop, which gives me so I wake up Wednesday always tired because I always bike Tuesday night, and I will take typically a nap on Wednesday afternoon to offset the loss of deep sleep that I'll get tonight. So knowing those patterns is good, but exercise on a regular basis is so good. It's for it to not affect your sleep patterns, you don't want to have high intense aerobic exercise in the evenings. You would rather do those a little bit earlier on in the day. So that's kind of one thing, but exercise is a great way to metabolize a hormone called cortisol, which is a stress hormone, by increasing your heart rate, which allows your body to calm down at night, which will allow you to get a deeper sleep and a better quality sleep. So exercise is one. Decreasing stimulants. A lot of people drink alcohol to calm them down because it's a depressant. It will put you to sleep, but again, it will affect your quality of sleep. So during the day, it's always really good to have light. Like I like to get at least 10 minutes of sun on my skin. I just like that in health. I love the vitamin D. I love what the sun does to your system. And ultimately, we get our energy from the sun. So you get more sun. You exercise earlier on in the day. You decrease stimulants. You decrease the amount of food that you eat at night when you're going to bed. And then all of that together will allow you to prepare yourself to be able to get out of your own brain at night. And then different techniques to do that.
I know that there's some studies. I don't know how recent they are. I feel like they're not very old, but I know they've been really correlating this concept of Alzheimer's disease, dementia, being tied to poor quality of sleep and lack of sleep. And my understanding, just from hearing other people kind of speak on this, is it's because like our brain doesn't properly have the opportunity to like flush itself and strengthen those neuroplasticity ways between our brain and stuff during night. And if we're constantly waking up or we're being woken up, it doesn't give our brain the opportunity to do that. Is there any sort of, like, as a doctor, in your opinion, is there any correlation to getting a poor quality of sleep and tying it to like an Alzheimer's disease?
I know a lot of people are trying to do that, right? And for me, it's like back in the day when they try to pull something like Okinawa, they pulled out coral calcium because they found that population's healthier, and they take one variable out and then they research and like, oh, it must be the coral calcium. And then you know, that was a big thing. And, you know, they link, you know, lack of sleep, or then they have too much sleep, and people napping have Alzheimer's. And then, you know, you need caffeine and then you don't get Alzheimer's. So then you, and then there was another one saying, oh, back sleeping can cause Alzheimer's. And then there's just so many things. So ultimately, brain health is the best way to maintain a healthy brain, is first not demyelinate the brain. And you do that through, you know, being conscious of taking statins or different things like that, that can affect that cholesterol and the level in the brain. And then the major thing, exercise that you can do for somebody to maintain brain health, is actually balance work. So as somebody becomes older, or let's say they sit down more, they watch more TV, they drive a lot more to work, they just have their butt in a chair for 8 hours a day, or you know, 5 hours a day, that lack of movement atrophies the brain. Atrophy is a specific part of the brain called the prefrontal, called the vermis, and that destroys the vermis. It's designed to build a healthy prefrontal cortex. So the prefrontal cortex is where your executive functioning is. So you want to make sure that you're maintaining optimal proprioceptive signals into the brain. You do that by working on balance. You do that by establishing a healthy cervical curve, and then and somebody can work on balance by using a wobble board. There's so much more. I think that it's misrepresentative to look at just sleep in Alzheimer's. I know there's just so many people that are trying to attach that. I think the biggest thing in Alzheimer's is loss of proprioception due to our lack of movement as we get older.
No, that makes a lot of sense. And I guess one of the questions that I really want to kind of, I guess, focus on or ask, is there anything else that we can do when it comes to getting a good quality of sleep? We've talked about, you know, the sleep position, how important that is. Light. You know, you mentioned it, quite a few other things there. Is there anything else that we can do either during the day or at nighttime, or anything else that we can do to really help us to set us up for a really good night's sleep? Because I think the idea of, you know, getting a disease or getting sick or any, like, it's very overwhelming. And I know it's not really a, you know, if you get like a one night's sleep, you're not going to wake up full of disease. It's more like a compound effect. So is there anything that we can do that will help serve us over a long period of time to make sure that we're getting adequate, good quality sleep?
Yeah. So I think, well, really, as a practitioner, you can't improve what you don't monitor, or you know, so objectively, I would say get something like, you know, a sleep device that monitors your sleep. So like I use a ring on my finger that monitors my sleep. They have things called Whoop. They have things that, you know, the Apple phone or an iWatch. I believe that it is so important to structurally see what your quality of sleep is. And then there's also something that's called heart rate variability. So there are these HRV monitors. A lot of the sleep readings do that. They look at how your heart beats to tell you how much sleep you're getting and how ready for the day you are, looking at your HRV readings. So you take your HRV and you say, I feel unbelievable today. And then you look at how much sleep you got. And then you look at, okay, what did you do to affect your quality of sleep that night? Because everybody is different. If I eat a little too late, I get if I have, for instance, one alcoholic beverage, my sleep is destroyed. I know other people that can have two or three alcoholic beverages, they get a great night's sleep. So everybody is individual. But in order to answer a broad question like that, I would have to put that back on the individual saying, all right, look, first thing you would have to do is you're going to have to monitor your sleep some way. Again, quantify from the next day, from 0 to 10, how energetic you are. And start seeing, this is how much sleep I got. This is how energetic I am. You know, and then when you're at a 2 energy-wise, well, what was it that affected your sleep? More than likely, it's going to be one of those things we talked about, alcohol, drugs, or caffeine, and or you ate too late, or you went to sleep thinking about too much and you got a horrible quality of sleep. There's really only a few things that affect it, other than somebody's a shift worker and their schedule is always changing. Because if you establish a good quality schedule, you have a nice cool room, no light leaks, you create a sleep sanctuary where it's a safe place for you to fall asleep. You fall asleep within that sanctuary. You wake up. You do that consistently. Your patterns will start to change and adapt, and you'll get more deep sleep and REM sleep, and things will recategorize for you, and you'll see your scores improve with consistency.
I don't want to take up too much of your time, but you mentioned something that kind of sparked a question for me, was this idea of sleep apnea. Is this something that we are doing as a lifestyle that's contributing to us having sleep apnea? You know, the people I can think of in my head, I'm like, they tend to be a little bit overweight. They tend to be drinkers. There seems to be more lifestyle that's at play here, but is there like a genuine correlation or something we can do that would help improve anyone who maybe is suffering with sleep apnea? Like with that neck pillow, you know, if you did that for, I'm not sure how many weeks, months, or years, like would that improve it? Or is that more of like, that's a lifestyle long-winded kind of question and answer?
Well, it is a little bit of a long question, because, you know, sleep apnea, is it airway? Is it because you're not breathing well? Is it tongue dropping because it's neurological and there's a C6 issue with the neck? Is it the angle of your head when you're sleeping? Are you sleeping with too much of a chin tucked? Or if you bring your head all the way back and you sleep in a specific position, your airway is going to open up and there's nothing your tongue's going to be able to do to break that down. So it's positional. And then the weight, extra weight is an issue. And then when you're sleeping with alcohol, you tend to lose the autonomic subconscious closing down on the mouth, and it will just open up and your tongue will drop back. So it's all of those things. So it's lifestyle compared. It's lifestyle in nature, and there could be some neurological also, and it's airway management. So in working with sleep apnea, and I've worked with, you know, a lot of people with it. Unfortunately, it's so individualized. But in general, if you can get your position correct, you can lose weight, decrease alcohol, you can help a significant amount of people that suffer from sleep apnea sleep way better.
Dr. Peter, this has been such an incredible conversation. Before I send everybody to check you out online, maybe they want to grab one of your pillows, I wanted to ask, is there a book, podcast, or resource that has brought you incredible value? It does not have to be related to sleep, although it can be, that has brought you value that you want to share with the audience?
I'm a really big mindset guy, right? I truly believe that your number one defining characteristic of how healthy you are your beliefs, because your beliefs dictate your actions. And what you do ritualistically on a daily basis defines your health and well-being. And I think one of the best mindset guys out there is Tony Robbins. I really like his podcast. I like how authentic he is through the podcast, and then just listen to the people that he interviews. I'm a big mindset person. And once you get the mindset of, you know what, I can do this, I actually have a lot more control of my health than I've been taught that I do. And really, when I look at my dysfunction, I have dis-ease, dis-hyphen-ease, it's really a product of how my body's adapting to my lifestyle. So if I can then backtrack, okay, and find resources that can teach you what lifestyle things that you have made to be able to get the health that you have, then you by changing your mindset, you're going to be able to get the health you want by just backing in a healthier way to live.
I couldn't agree more with you. I think mindset is something that is so underrated when it comes to impacting our health, our wellness, and our lifestyle. It could be a whole other new podcast episode, but I want to be mindful of your time. If people want to check you out online, maybe they want to see that viral TikTok video you put out, or they want to grab a hold of one of your neck support pillows, where can everybody go and find you?
So if they want a neck nest, they can go on necknest.com, necknest.com, and use the code BALANCE and receive 10% off of the entire store at Neck Nest. If they would like to follow me or enter our free community or find out any other information, my acronym is Dr. Sleep Right, SLEEPRIGHT. And you can follow me on TikTok. That's where our viral video was. Or Instagram and Facebook. So we're on both of those. NeckNest also has the page also, but the NeckNest page is focused on, okay, how to sleep, positioning, how to use a NeckNest. And the Dr. Sleep Ride page is more of the education of how to sleep, why to sleep, and all the stuff that we talked about here.
Perfect. I will make sure that everything is linked in the show notes. Thank you so much for this conversation.
Well, thank you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to be able to serve your community of people. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Thanks, Megan.
If you love this podcast episode, spread the love by sharing this with your friends and family, share it out on social media, and don't forget to give it a 5-star rating and review. From the bottom of my heart, I am so grateful that you are here. Until next time.